Okay, let's get started. Week 8. How's everybody doing? Any comments on the Gate Lab tour? Caitlin's here.
Don't worry.
No, I heard some positive comments. Anybody else want to chime in on their experience? Evan?
Yeah, well, I had fun. Thank you. Maybe it's feeling a lot better today. Less walking around. I don't know.
Okay.
Your treasure.
Yeah, I have some photos from there that I can share with the that are posted, so you can look at them. So, same old stuff. Sign-up sheet. We'll have a break, and people who haven't signed the attendance list can come down. Have a couple cupcakes left. Just a few lectures upcoming on Tuesday. A doubleheader. Jules Sherman will talk about aesthetics and assistive technology, and Robert Liepert talk about what's involved in starting an assistive technology company, because he has one. So what better person to have? And a week from today, we'll have Ralph Hotchkiss, and he's an engineer from Berkeley area, and he's done a lot of work in wheelchair designs for developing countries. So these will all be very interesting. And, of course, the week after that, on Tuesday, the student's final presentation, they're going to be 5 minutes again, and I've got a strategy to make sure that it will all fit in one day, which I'll share with you next week. And then 2 weeks from today, March 13th, it's going to be a lot of fun because all the students are going to be bringing their projects to show other people. So it'll be sort of like a student project fair. We'll have burritos and pizza and stuff, and fill out some evaluation forms. So all that is going to be a lot of fun. Okay. Web links. There's a web page devoted to reimbursement. So pass that along to the students as well. Very simple procedure to get reimbursed, but it has to be done correctly. Otherwise, it just takes a lot of time. Missed lectures, I want to bring this up once more because there are a few students who have missed lectures and they haven't submitted a makeup. It's really important that you do so because it can affect your grade. And as I mentioned many times, there's information, lecture material that you listen to and view, slides to view, web links, photos and stuff. You look at all that stuff and either write a summary or arrange to meet with me to discuss that. So that might be a good option for people who have who want to engage in a discussion. So that would be that's important. So I want to mention this. For students who have missed lectures, there's three options. You can make up the missed lectures by the end of the quarter, which is the preferred way of doing it. If you don't, you can experience an impact on your grade. You don't want that to happen. But one strategy, if you're really busy and can't do a good job on the makeup for these lectures, is just to ask me to record an incomplete. And then you have a year to submit your summaries. And as soon as I get all the summaries, I can give you your grade. And the incomplete doesn't appear. It disappears. It's like it was never there. So think of that as an option. But if you have to tell me that you want to take an incomplete. Okay, does that help some people? Okay. So if you don't make up the lectures up, you know, I can either give you the grade that incorporates the impact, or if you don't do anything, then it's like you never took the class. Okay? That's the thing. And if I give you a grade here, it can't be modified. So you can't say, why don't you give me my A now, and I'll make up the lectures, you know, a week afterwards.
That doesn't work.
That's not an option. Okay? If anybody has any questions about that, you know, let me know. just working on projects. It's your home stretch. You have about a week and a half before the final presentation. So a couple strategies to help you along is you can identify all the tasks that you have remaining on your project, assign them to people, you know, write them out so you can check them off as you go along so nothing gets overlooked. And if things don't work out as planned, then you should have, you know, a backup plan. If you've bitten off more than you could do in your project, then it's important to have, you know, a backup. I tried to do this. Here's our last prototype that worked. Our final prototype, we're still having issues with. So have a backup plan. If you want to meet with me, I'm available. There's a sign-up list here. Also, you can use that sign-up list to meet with me to discuss missed lectures. That list is important. For students who are engineers and done stuff on your report that you can have that involves calculations or engineering, please include that in your report. It's important to have that because you are engineers. Okay. Earlier this week, I emailed you the scanned, corrected, or marked up midterm reports. If you have any questions about that, let me know. As I mentioned, don't get frustrated or discouraged by the amount of red on your paper. That happens. It happens to me all the time. So you should think of your report and your midterm reporting presentation as just practice, as prototypes for your final report. I want to mention that having good communication skills will help you throughout your career. Because you're only going to be students for so long, and then you're going to be out there, and you're going to have to do these things all the time. And for your final presentation, I really want you to step out of your role as a student. And for those 5 or 10 minutes that you're presenting, you are a professional. So I want you to present like a professional, dress like a professional, and think like a professional. So it's maybe your first time practicing that role. It's important for you to do so because that's going to be the role that you're going to be in for the rest of your life. Okay? No longer students. So, at the Gate Lab, we talked about the marker balls, and the property of these marker balls is called retroreflectivity. And the way that it works in two dimensions, if you have two reflecting surfaces at right angles, the incoming beam gets reflected back in the same path, also from an oblique angle. If you put three reflectors in a 3D configuration, all perpendicular to each other, then it's a trihedral corner, and again, incident light or electromagnetic radiation will reflect right back to the source. And so 3M makes this tape, which has this property. I'm not sure how they squish these things into a flat surface, but they do, and they can also make it into a marker ball. And then when you take a picture of it, this shows how bright they are when you take a flash picture. And of course, that's Evans Lake. Recorded for posterity. Okay. Oh, so broadband. It's our last class today, and we thank her for attending our class and being the best visiting professor we've ever had. And this is her that we're passing around so everybody can get to sign it. So thank you so much for being here and experiencing Stanford in my class.
I love it here.
Okay. Well, you still have to go back. You know, your passport, you know, expires. So I gave her a Stanford cap, which she will wear proudly when she gets back to Thailand. Okay. So on Tuesday, as I mentioned, Jewel Sherman talking about aesthetics, Robert Liepert. Oh, great, it fits. Excellent. That looks great. And Robert Liepert talking about assistive technology. So what we're going to do now is we're going to set up for Peter. He's going to be talking about all the great things he's done over the years. It's been a lot of stuff because he's like me, he's a really old guy, so he's done a lot of stuff. So these are the things he just did last year. It's too much. It's been, you know, like probably 30 years worth of stuff. So afterwards, if you want, you can join us for dinner at Max's Opera Cafe in Stanford Shopping Center. And here's the shopping center, and Max's is on the far corner toward the Menlo Park side. Here's El Camino Real, and here's the front. And Max's is toward the back, and it looks just like this. So I'll take a show of hands at the end, and we can make reservations and probably be there around 6:30 or so. Okay? So we'll take a little break now to get Peter all set up. So if you haven't done so, sign the attendance sheet, pick up an outline. And Peter, you have some more to put over here. And get ready.
Thank you.
You too.
Didn't have any problems getting here.
No car problem.
I just had to park a little farther than I.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm going to put up the slide deck that I took out from.
Okay. Okay. I'm trusting that you're picking out what you think will be most helpful for everybody. So, does this have a laser on it?
I'm
going to
see you at dinner.
Okay, great.
I'm just going to sit
at
the back, great. So
I don't disturb. Okay, I'm listening. Thanks. And then tomorrow, I don't know what time I'm done, but I don't think based on that storm coming in, I'm going to spend the night tomorrow night as well, so maybe we can hook up.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Dave, does it matter which side I sit on?
No. Maybe more room over there.
Yeah. So did I tell you I rode up by email? Did I email you I went up the one mountain pass that you do the death ride on? Is it Luther Pass Monitor?
The original route.
Well, what are the names of them?
You're finding that when you're 83, names disappear really fast.
So the one that...
Monitor.
So Monitor is the one I went up. And I did it in my hand bike with a leash hooked up to one of the guys in our men's group, Michael.
Michael, yeah.
And he was in his lowest gear. I was in my lowest gear. It took 3.5 hours to get to the top. The road was closed because it was still winter, but there wasn't a lot of snow. There were just a few patches of snow left on it. And I was scared to death coming down because I just had one little caliper break. So I put a disc. I had a new front wheel made for my hand bike with a disc and a hydraulic brake, got that lined up, and so I'm ready to go try it again.
This is for you.
Thank you. We were going to, you know, it's got two peaks at the top, and we thought, oh, this one's good enough, and Michael's like, oh, let's go to the top one, so... So we went down and then up to the final peak. That was where I tested my brakes going down the first time. I'm like, I can't let myself get going very fast.
One on Evans Pass, where it's a very short switchback.
Thank you.
So, probably known Peter 35 years. I met him when he was a student at Stanford, and he was working on a hand bike with another colleague. And then he worked at the VA for a number of years, and now he's out on his own. Peter has a long history of being innovative engineer, working on projects that will not only help people with disabilities, but himself as well. He invented equipment for a new sport, which he excelled in, won all the gold medals at the beginning, and was probably going to, it's a Paralympic event. So,
starts next weekend.
Next weekend. And,
weekend.
Peter, excuse me?
Yeah, the week from
Saturday. So, without further ado, let's give Peter a warm welcome.
Hi everyone, it's great to be back on campus. And I lived at 558 or whatever Mayfield on the corner there, and I was just kind of like coming back home, driving in. So it's awesome to be here, and hope you guys get some ideas about maybe things that'll, maybe you don't go into the field of assistive technology, but maybe you get some ideas in the back of your head that help make the work and the design work and things that you design and build and problem solve on work for more people with less ability than maybe you'd planned originally. I'm going to plow through a lot of different things that we've worked on, just kind of hit some highlights on things, and I'll try to make sure I leave a little time at the end. If you see something you really want to ask about, just kind of wave your arms. I want to ask a question about that thing, what it is. But I will try to explain as much as possible. There's a student that has a visual impairment in the class, is that correct? Okay, so I won't try to explain what things look like then. I'm going to assume that you can all see what's up there. This is a mission statement of our company that we wrote as a team, and basically I got injured in a rock climbing accident when I was at the Air Force Academy. I was a cadet there training as an aeronautical engineer to graduate and be a navigator on the early B-1 bombers. So I have an avid interest in aviation, and I usually fly down here, but because of the weather and the storm coming in on Friday, I didn't fly down. So Reg helped me drive down this morning through the snow or through the Sierras, and we'll be going back Friday night or Saturday. But my accident really kind of short-circuited where I thought I was going, and my career got redirected into a different path. And when I came to Stanford, I was just, I'm not sure what kind of engineering I was going to do. They signed Dr. DeBray as my advisor, and he steered me in a bunch of different directions. And right away, I realized there were things that I wanted to do that I couldn't do because the technology and equipment didn't exist. And so right in my first year of school here, there were things I was trying to do that I couldn't do. So I started designing things to do those things. And so I found out that there's a field called rehab engineering that I was perfectly suited for. And I also found out that there were a lot of other people that wanted to do the things that I was designing to do. And one of them is the skiing that I'll show you. And it's a Paralympic sport now. And the Paralympics start a week from Saturday, I think is the day, or a week from Friday. And right in Sochi, the same Olympics basically reopen in the same stadium and the same ski runs and the same hill and everything. The Paralympics will be taking place with sled hockey and alpine skiing and cross-country and biathlon and all those sports. So it's supposed to be on NBC Sports Network. So NBC says they're going to televise it for the first time. I guess they're going to televise a lot of it on that Sports Network channel. So let me go ahead and jump in and start talking about, we seek to enhance the quality of life for people of all abilities and to achieve this by developing marketing technology for daily living, vocational, and leisure activities. When I went through rehab, there was a lot of focus on independent living skills and getting back to work and stuff, but my interests were how do I continue to do the leisure things that I like doing, and so you'll get to see some examples of those leisure things, because you have to remember that people are motivated as complete people. You know, we have interests that are academic, and we have interests that are work, and we have interests that are social, and you have to make sure that you can keep that balance of activity going in your life so that you can keep doing the things that are important to you to refresh yourself mentally and physically and spiritually. So I work with a team of people, there's about 10 of us, and I find that by bringing together different skill sets, that really helps accomplish things, because I only have skill sets in certain areas, and I can't afford to be an expert in everything that I do. So I have my IT tech person on the top there. We have a trails expert. Our researcher is actually still in Santa Cruz. Our company was based in Santa Cruz for 20 years. Shauna has a mobility impairment as well and still works with our company from Santa Cruz. And we have bookkeeper and software electronics type personalities that are harder for me to communicate with, but they're do great at their job. Ben's a graphic artist and our office manager there on the right. The first thing we got started on is, you know, wheelchairs. I use a wheelchair myself for mobility. We design and build machines to test them. This machine has drums under there that rotate around, slats hit the wheelchairs, and we pound them with about 200,000 cycles of testing on the chair to make sure they're durable. It's a power chair, and power chair actually drives the drums to do the testing, and that simulates about 5 years of usage. And then we have another machine where we pick it up and drop the chair. So there's the drum chair, drum tester. This is a drop tester. It picks it up physically and then just drops it onto the ground about 7,000 times. And so this equipment isn't, you can't just go buy it, so you have to design the equipment and create it. So we have a standards committee at ISO and national standards for testing the equipment. We have tilt platforms and test frames for testing. This is a fixture that we use for calibrating the test dummy in the chair. And in the back of the aircraft hangar where I keep my plane is a big ramp that we raise up, and then we take power chairs on there and we try to flip them over backwards, laterally, backwards, forward to make sure that they're stable so that in any configuration that chair can be set up and driven in, that it's going to be safe for a person that's using it. We have a standard kind of shop with powder coating and machine tools and a lathe and milling machine and small CNC. And so that's how we build our stuff. So in product development, yeah, you had a question?
How do you factor in the weight of the person on the chair, for example, in ramps, the way you're trying to flip them over?
What we do on that wooden chair I showed you, we actually tilt the chair and balance it forward and backward to make sure that the center of mass of the test dummy is in exactly the right spot. And we have the test dummies, and we adjust the test dummies for each weight. And there's formulas that we use for putting the center of mass in the correct spot so that we're properly testing for stability with the right height and fore aft position of the center of mass. And we build the test dummies as well, and we sell them to some of our clients so that they can do preliminary testing in-house. So in the product development area, we've developed a number of products that are accessible. Those would be mainstream products. And then there's opportunities for universal design, because if you design an adaptive product, like my wheelchair is an adaptive product. Not everybody uses a wheelchair to get around. So an adaptive product is me talking about something specifically for somebody with a certain kind of impairment that helps them to do something. The glasses we wear is an adaptive thing for those of us that don't have perfect eyesight or contact lenses. So everybody uses, you know, people can't run 60 miles an hour, so we have cars. We can't fly, so we have airplanes. So there's a lot of technology that everybody uses, but when it's adaptive for somebody that has a specific disability, that's when I use the word adaptive. And then in the adaptive category, I'm going to talk about personal technologies, like the things that I wear, my wheelchair, my glasses, my back support, my hand rims. Those are personal technologies, and then there's technologies designed to do certain activities, and I'll call those activity-specific technologies. And this physical, intellectual, spiritual balance that goes on in every person's life, you know, if you're a very physically oriented person and you do triathlons and mountain bike rides and all that sort of stuff, and you have a disability, it's going to be important for you to figure out how to continue to do physical things. If you're not a particularly physical person and you're more a writer or a computer type person, then physical activities might, access to that might not be as important. It might be more important that you have access to the equipment that you use in the lab or something. So for each person, you have to think about this balance that gets interrupted in somebody when they have a disability occur in their life. So, speaking of which, this is my daughter, Rhea. So here we are on the Snake River up in Idaho on our vacation. And then she says, "Oh, Dad, I want to go rafting." And it's like, how am I going to do that one? And so then quickly we adapted and figured out how to tie a whole bunch of life preservers together and strap my legs around them. So I sort of improvised sort of a chair, a floating chair, to sit on in the raft. So I was basically sitting on my legs with a bunch of life preservers sort of tied together around my legs so that if I fell in the water, I sort of had this stuff with me, but when I was in the raft, I had a way to sit up and be able to paddle. Otherwise, I was just going to kind of lay on my back in the raft and go for the ride. So sometimes you have to be ready to improvise and design on the spot when your daughter decides she wants to do something. And then last summer, she decided she wanted to go for a zip line ride. And so we figured out how to put a harness on my waist and another harness on my knees, because if I flew into the tree, I was concerned about my legs getting broken off underneath. So we hung me on my knees and my waist. So this is some impromptu adaptive technology on the fly. So there I am on the fly. After the 6 trees, she's like, "Daddy, can we go on the grande one now?" It's like, maybe next year. So that was a fun ride. So physical exercise, our company's working on standards for accessible fitness equipment that I'm going to look at a little bit later too. And then there's this spiritual dimension of your life, making sure that you pay attention to your priorities and in that area. The sociological dimension I call thinking about whether you're like a dependent person or an independent person. Some people like to do things really independently on their own, and sometimes people like to be more dependent on other people. And so someone might have a lot of adaptive equipment to do something, and someone else might have a personal care attendant. And so that might be somebody's preference. Or somebody might be in between, where they want to be able to do some things independent and other things in a dependent way. And sometimes I might decide I want to purposely go out and do something in a very dependent way, like Dr. DeBray was describing, that went up a monitor pass on my hand cycle with a tether hooked up to my partner on his mountain bike, and it was all that we could do, both in our lowest gears, to get to the top of the mountain. We still had to stop 3 or 4 times because our gears just weren't quite low enough. So I got lower gears, but we'll see how it works this year. This fellow's using a hiking chair. This is my hiking chair, and he's testing it out. He couldn't get between the boulders, so he got into a situation where he was dependent on some additional assistance, but otherwise, with the disc brakes on the chair, he was independent, generally going downhill. This fellow wanted to go skydiving, and so he's hooked up to in a tandem jump, and he's got an oxygen bottle there because he's a ventilator quad, and so he can't even breathe on his own. So some people go to great extremes to do the thing that they really want to go out and do, and it takes a lot of thought and energy because you can't carry the whole ventilator along for the skydiving trip. So you got to modify things. So this is an ultralight aircraft that I'm flying here, and basically by modifying the ground steering with some pull ropes, I figured out how to steer on the ground and control the flight controls in the air. So I talked about the personal activity-specific environmental technology. The environmental technologies are basically, you know, things that don't move. Activity-specific are things to do a specific sport, like the sit ski here for skiing. This was my first student project when I was at Stanford. And I remember my teachers, instructors, professors scratching their heads like, who's going to want to do something like that? That wasn't Dan. He was the one that went with me testing it on the first one. And now it's a Paralympic sport with model skiing, and this is the type of equipment that you'll see out there with a shock absorber in there to replace the knee function that's adjustable and speeds of, 70 to 80 miles an hour. Skiing and slalom, super G, downhill, all the same events that everybody else skis in. This is a bi-ski. It has two skis underneath it. So by leaning, the skis mechanically articulate to carve a turn. And it has to be able to fit on the lift. That's the important part. So there has to be a mechanism in there to lift up and lock to give back onto the chairlift. And there has to be an evacuation harness. If it breaks down, you got to get everybody off the lift. And so we designed that into all the equipment and set standards for the equipment for being able to handle out. This is I call it my spring rod. I don't have any back muscles. So if I put my hands here on my tummy and I lean over, basically fall over, I have stomach muscles to pull myself forward, but I don't have the back muscles. So this little fiberglass fishing rod kind of thing in the back kind of sticks up into this harness that I wear on my chest. And so when I flex either diagonally or forward, that energy goes into that spring and then it pulls me back up into position. So this is a really helpful thing for a lot of different kinds of activities where people want to play tennis or move in a dynamic way to sit back up. This is my dynamic cross-country ski. I went out and tried this last Saturday with my daughter. She's learning how to cross-country ski. And it tips backward and forward. So basically, when I lean forward, it tips me forward so I get an increased range of motion, and then when I pull through, it gives me a little snap at the back. It gives me a little bit of that energy back, like a kick and glide, like you would do cross-country skiing. Everybody tells me it wouldn't be legal in the races, but I'm not racing anymore. So this is my backcountry ski. So when you go into the backcountry, if you have a cross-country ski and there's a cross slope, you just tip over and fall over. And so the idea here is you can adjust these little outrigger skis to the right angle so that you can go across a cross slope. This is what called the PAX back. This is the back support that's on the back of my wheelchair. And this back support allows me to give me a sort of a lower lumbar, upper sacral back support so that I can set myself up nice and straight when I'm at a desk. But if I'm going down a hill, I'm going to lose my balance forward. So when I'm going down a hill, I can just reach back and loosen it like that and keep my balance. I sit an inch and a half taller when I adjust it for indoors or outdoors, depending on what I'm doing. I'm traveling on the airlines. Those airline aisles are really, really narrow. So I came up with a way to put extra wheels on my chair so I could pull the main wheels off in the galley, put the wheels into the closet, pull myself down to my seat, get into the seat, fold up the chair, and then the frame of the chair actually fits in the overhead with all the wheels taken off. So to make traveling easier, I came up with these wheels. This is a pneumatic piano pedal pusher. It's basically just a simple foot pump with a blood pressure cuff, and you pump it up, and so I've got strapped around my waist, so when I tighten my stomach muscles, it pushes the sostenino pedal on the pedal on the piano. I wanted to figure out how to drive. Everybody always, when you're young, you want to say, I want to drive a stick shift, car. And so I came up with a way to put all the controls on one control. So I push forward for brake, I push down for clutch, and then I twist the grip for throttle. So some of you probably drive stick shifts, and you know you need 3 feet, basically, right? One for the brake, one for the clutch, and one for the gas. So sometimes you're like pulling the parking brake and trying to let that off while you're putting the throttle and letting the clutch out. Well, I can do that with one hand. Twist the throttle, let it off the clutch, and let off the brake with one hand. So in some ways, it's a lot easier than trying to use 3 feet. And I throw my wheelchair in the back. This is a seat that I designed. You know, some of you have seen people sitting on balls and sort of balance chairs where you sit in this posture where your thighs are tilted forward, or motorcycle seating, some people call it, and it relieves the pressure in your lower back. And so I came up with a chair that sits like this, and also a wheelchair that allows me to sit like that. I can sit in this posture, and then it has another posture where it comes back where my legs are level when I'm sitting at a desk or going down a hill. But this is the posture that I would be in at a desk or at a workstation. This is my hiking shoes. So, you know, you think about this when you go traveling. You know, you take along your ski boots, your hiking shoes. Okay, well, we're going to go skiing and hiking. Okay, I need this to go hiking. I'm going mono skiing. Okay, I need my mono ski. Oh, let's do a little cross-country skiing. I need another device. You have to sort of think out, well, what am I going to really do today? Because I can only fit so many things in my van. So I pretty much have to decide in the morning, okay, we're going hiking today. We're not going skiing or whatever it is. This chair puts a smile on my face. I've got four-wheel disc brakes. I can go down a flight of stairs in this chair in control using the brakes on there. So this is on the top of Mount Washburn in Yellowstone National Park. And if the trail is supposed to go to the waterfall, I like to go to the waterfall. So sometimes that means getting in the water. So this was a student project that I supervised here at Stanford, two ME students, hand cycles, Doug Schwant and Mindy, I'm blanking on her name. But Doug's still in the area. But this is, you pedal with your arms, it's got those extra little training wheels. Once you get going, you just pull those up, and now you're a two-wheeled bike, balancing like any other bicycle, pedaling with your arms, and then there's the tandem version as well. This is a custom contoured cushion, and you can see I drew these little pen maps at different depths. So that's what my bottom looks like. I'm kind of skin and bones from, basically, if you have a spinal cord injury, everywhere you're paralyzed, your muscles all atrophy, and so you don't have any muscle anymore, so you have to be careful what you sit on. So this is that memory foam that was developed in the space program, and they sell it for beds and mattresses and stuff to allow you to sit for long periods of time. And so when I fly, I can be at a flight for 4 or 5 hours sitting in the same spot. So you got to have good seating. So we wanted to be able to test cushions like that. So we took a skeleton and we put it inside the gel so we could actually test it. And we push it into the cushion and we can put a pressure map in there and we can see what the pressures are, because we want to evenly distribute the pressures where somebody's sitting. This is what the pressure map looks like when they're evenly distributed. The pressures, you know, we don't want the red pressure, so we want to distribute the weight out onto the thighs and to the other parts of the body so that it's not just two red bones sitting back there. So this has become a standard for testing cushions. So you can see this is what some of the different, this is me sitting on a whole bunch of different cushions. So you can see this one has the least pressures. That one has the most pressures. That's just a standard foam. That's an air cushion. So we made an adjustable skeleton that we could simulate orthopedic deformities like pelvic tilt and pelvic lateral scoliosis to test different cushions. So there you can see how that cushion is simulating somebody that's got a tilted pelvis that's tilted to the left. Didn't realize these were in there. Have you guys already been through any sort of seating? Anybody does wheelchair seating clinic kind of stuff? know, just talk about it for a second. So if somebody had an obliquity, this is what would happen. All the pressures would go to one side. If somebody was tilted back in their wheelchair, all the pressures would go back onto the tailbone right back there. That's the tailbone. And if that's a tilt and a twist, then you can see how things get really bad over in one area. So another thing that happens is sometimes people have a lot of spasticity in their lower extremities, and their muscles will cause them to thrust out of their wheelchair and get into a really awkward, non-functional posture. So we decided to figure out a way to try to hold people in the chair better. Lap belts can only do so much. So we designed this thing called a hip grip. It goes around the pelvis here, and it's got springs basically on the side. So it's sort of like the spring rod in the back that I showed you, but it's on the side and designed to fit into a wheelchair. So this is actually a product that a company sells under a license from our company, and it's called the hip grip. And so you can put it into the wheelchair system, and somebody, it might just help a child with cerebral palsy or something just be functional enough to eat. But it also might allow somebody to play tennis or dance or do an athletic activity or to be more functional in all of their everyday activities. So this is what it looks like with this gal that's using it in her chair. So when she's got her armrests on and stuff, you don't necessarily notice that it's there necessarily. This gal is a dancer for the Access Dance Company in Berkeley, and she wears a hip grip to do her dance maneuvers that they do in their performances. So when we design things, we come up with, you know, all the different concepts and ideas, and this is sort of what it evolved into. It's sort of a bunch of modular pieces that you could put together, and then the springs on the side. And then we do lab testing where we cycle it a million times and make sure it's not going to break and come apart and cause somebody to get injury. And finally, it ends up as a product. It took years to get that to be a product. And we found that it functionally improves, like this child, it improves that child's reach, that they can go forward and then get back into their wheelchair. It improves people's reach down to the side. And now I'm going to talk about the flex room. This is basically taking the hand rim to another level. So most hand rims are mounted to the wheelchair with rigid connections. So it'd be sort of like you walking around in street shoes or boots or something versus walking around in tennis shoes. So this rim, because it's connected with rubber, allows the hand rim to move. And so why is that important? Well, we want this hand rim here connected to the wheel rim to be flexible for a couple different reasons. And we needed to figure out a way to allow the fingers to get underneath on the bottom and the thumb to push in on the top. So this is how the hand actually interfaces with the rim. So because my hands don't grip so well anymore after 30 years of gripping, now all I have to do is just push my hand against there. I don't have to grip at all. I just push my hand into that hand rim, and I get the grip that I need because it's flexible. And also, when I hit that hand rim, it absorbs the energy so that it's more like wearing a pair of tennis shoes than wearing a pair of street shoes, if that makes sense, for a wheelchair user, because it absorbs the impact between the hand and the hand rim. So to test it, we would push on it until it would fail to figure out how strong it was and how durable it needed to be. And then we set up a wheelchair biomechanics lab. I saw you were looking at the little marker balls where you were doing the gait analysis. We basically do a gait analysis so you can sort of see where all the marker balls are on this guy in the lab. And we create the stick figure of this guy pushing to look at the efficiency of how he's pushing, and then we have a wheel with strain gauges on it to measure the torque and the forces that are being applied in all three directions. And of course, we're measuring the expired gases to see how efficiently the person's pushing as well, and measuring their heart rate, and we're measuring with EMG electrodes, we're measuring how hard this person's having to grip as well, and then the motion capture dots that I already talked to you about. The other neat thing that it does is they squeeze in, so when you need to go through a really narrow door, the hand rims just kind of squish in and let you go through really narrow spots. So those are commercially available now by a company called Spinergy that makes bicycle wheels. They make high-end bike wheels, and so they sell the flex rim wheels for wheelchair users under a license from Beneficial Design. The grip rim is another idea for somebody that is maybe a quadriplegic that can't actually grip. And so this piece of rubber has little pieces of plastic inside of it so that you can just hold those hand rims still in your hand and then just push on it, and then the rubber and the sleeve around the hand rim grips the hand rim inside. So it's a way to sort of increase the grip for somebody that has no hand function to be able to grip at all. They can just push against that and it'll grip against the hand rim inside. But it'll still let it spin when you're going downhill. So just to show you a little bit of how we work on developing things, this is my kayak that I have a molded seat in for kayaking. And we wanted to figure out how can we, you know, without custom molding a seat for everybody, how can we make water sports accessible to more people with an adjustable type of seat? Because adaptive water sports, once you get somebody on the water, water's water, you can go anywhere on it. So we worked on developing this commercial adaptive canoe seat that has an adjustable hip pads, and then for people that need them, it also has these upper lateral supports. So this is a product that's being manufactured as well by Chosen Valley Canoe Accessories, and it lets you independently operate a canoe, and then there's straps that are put on my legs there to brace against the side of the canoe. So it attaches to a bench seat inside the canoe, and then I mentioned the lateral supports to hold the pelvis in place, and a low back support, and then if people need them, it's got the upper lateral supports. So we did the same thing. We modified a rowing ergometer, a Concept 2 rowing ergometer here, connected it to a paddle so we could measure using paddling against the ergometer, we could measure the efficiency. I'm wearing the expired gases monitor to see how efficiently, and then there's a computer program showing me when to paddle. And so this is one of the prototypes trying to figure out what do we need to do to give that person greater efficiency paddling that doesn't have balance and control. And this is what it ended up looking like in the final product. They also sell pontoons for somebody that has really poor balance to help balance even more. So the way that we went through the research is we used a metabolic analyzer and we measure the person's resting heart rate and we determine what their maximum output is, and we're trying to look at how much more efficient the seating is than just the basic bench seat that's in the canoe. And so we were able to publish papers to justify the research and development that NIH funded us to develop the seating to show that we had a functional benefit. You always generally have to prove and show that you have a functional benefit, even if it's miles per gallon in a car. You've got to be able to justify why something works better than something else. And in the case of assistive technology, it really helps to develop a research protocol to test and show that there's a functional benefit. The lateral balance, we would just tip the canoe laterally, and we would measure the angle that it was being tipped at with a smart level until the person could no longer balance. And then we had to make sure it was safe. Okay, you got a great canoe seating system, but you tip the person over and they don't come out of it. That's another problem, right? So we would tip them over in the water and make sure that they actually fell out of the boat, even with all this stuff behind them. So we verified that all worked. A lot of people have actually been injured with spinal cord injury surfing, and they want to get back out there and go surfing. So we modified a wave ski so that you could sit on it and basically surf sitting on a wave ski board using a paddle like a kayak. So I wanted to show some of the things that we work on at amusement parks. We work for Disney and Universal Studios and the Space Center, helping to design their rides to be more accessible. So when they're in the concept stage, I review the drawings, and then usually there's a mock-up that's built in a warehouse somewhere that I go evaluate at that stage. And then when it gets to be a product, it ends up, you know, being a modified ride vehicle. This one's modified so that you can actually roll into there, and then your companion can come and sit in that area of the ride vehicle. So they only have one of these modified ride vehicles online at any given time when the ride's operating. So this is another ride where this gal's getting on into the modified ride vehicle. She's going to back into this spot there, and it'll grab onto her wheelchair, and then there's companion seating next to her so she can ride with her companion sitting next to her there. This is a little more complicated one because water vehicles have to go in and down. So this had a roll-on platform, and then it would turn and drop down into the ride to get the person down into the ride. Now, some ride vehicles are so extreme in their movements, roller coasters and things, that you have to figure out how to get transfer into the ride vehicle. So in this case, the wheelchair pulls up next to the ride vehicle, and the side, see how the side folds down there? So this person can transfer onto that, and then they transfer down into the seat, and then the seat gets folded back up, and then the companion can sit down next to the rider. So in a lot of roller coasters where particularly they're trying to get the rider down lower to be along the axis where everything pivots and spins, it gets more and more complicated to make the access. Last year when the new ADA guidelines were accepted, all of the old existing rides had to be accessible well. This was an old ride, Jurassic Park, if any original Jurassic Park. So this is a water ride. This is the ride vehicle here, and this is the loading platform. And they're trying to, they came up with this idea that they would have this metal thing you would slide on, and then you'd slide down it to the next level, and then slide down into there. So there's the wheelchair, and this is kind of what they'd come up with. So the person had to slide into this special wheelchair, hook into this, and then slide down. It's kind of an uncontrolled slide down into the ride vehicle. It wasn't real safe. So first what we did is we mocked up a plywood mock-up of what we thought would work, and it slipped onto the side of the boat. So here the rider pulls in. Here's the mock-up testing it out. It's got three levels, 1, 2, 3, to get in. And then this is what the finished product looked like. So this slides onto the side of the boat and kind of looking from above. Here's the platform where the wheelchair pulls up. So I pull up here, transfer here, transfer here, transfer there. So it works either sliding in backwards, or you can turn, slide your legs in first and slide down forward, and then they pull this piece off and they have another one at the unload area. So that's what we had to do on that old ride because you couldn't just rebuild the whole ride, so we had to figure out how to make the existing ride accessible. Yeah. Yeah, so getting out, I basically sit backwards and then I just push up onto this spot. So basically, the standards and the guidelines say that you shouldn't have a transfer step over about 6 or 7 inches because that's a pretty good step to transfer up. So if you make the transfer in multiple steps, it's a lot easier than trying to make one giant 3x7, you know, 21-inch transfer in height. You make the transfer in three sections. So that's what we did there. So then Universal Studios is always trying to do something better and bigger and wilder. So they wanted to use this German ride car that is a goes on a roller coaster track. You can see the track where the track goes down here where all the wheels are. And basically, the idea is they didn't want anything around the person. So they just wanted something you sit in and one big giant lap belt thing that comes over and all the rest of you is hanging out there in the air on this roller coaster ride. So the concept was is it was going to go straight up in the air. This is the rocket roller coaster, if any of you've been on it. It goes straight up in the air, and then off you go. So it's a pretty radical ride. You're going upside down, twisting around, being thrown out of this thing. And so this bar there that's got to come across your waist, it's very, very strong. It's got a double redundant hydraulic system that holds that thing in place. Because if that bar came loose, well, you can imagine what would happen. So I get to meet the ride vehicle. I'm in a warehouse in Southern California. Plywood platform mocked up here. Here's my wheelchair. Trying to figure out how in the heck am I going to transfer around this thing from here back to my wheelchair, and how am I getting in there. Took help from a couple of other people in the first place. It was like, this is not going to work. There's no way anybody can transfer from their wheelchair into here, and the wheelchair won't fit into the space there. So the idea that we came up with was a special transfer vehicle, basically. So here I am transferring from my wheelchair onto the transfer vehicle. Here I am sitting on the transfer vehicle. The transfer vehicle's got a lot of weight behind it, and I'm sort of sitting around out in the front of it. So imagine I'm sort of perched on a really narrow sort of little forklift thing, right? I'm sitting out in the front of it, and they just plug me into the ride in front of this bar, and I transfer in. And so here you can see when this is slid in there, I transfer into there and then can pull the seat down, and off I go to ride the ride. So if you don't like motion sickness, don't try this ride. It's a pretty radical ride. You do get to choose the music that you get to listen to. Whoops. And then some of you may be familiar with Harry Potter, the ride Harry Potter. We worked on that one for a long time. Harry Potter is a ride where you just sit on a fiberglass seat with four seats next to each other, and it goes, and you're sitting actually about 15 feet up in the air on the end of a robot. So you're sitting in the seat at the end of the robot. So it can twist you, it can tilt you, it can swing you like this and swing you like this. And so you're on one of these robots rolling through the ride, getting moved around in space as you're riding the ride. And there's 39 of those robots at $250,000 each. The problem occurred was when the robot would come down, if you don't have control of your legs would come up and hit you in the face. And so one bloody nose later, we figured out we needed to change the way the ride vehicle was moving, and then we figured out that if we put a strap around the legs to keep the legs together and in place, that they weren't going to come up and somebody wasn't going to dislocate a hip or have a problem like that. So I finally got to ride that ride in December, because we're working on Harry Potter 2 now, which is a more of a roller coaster type of ride, but it's going to be the first roller coaster where you actually drive up onto a track that doesn't go anywhere, because once you drive up onto the track, it tips like a teeter-totter and then reconnects with another piece of track. So that's the first roller coaster in the world that's going to do that. So I went down to visit that one just before Christmas, and then there's going to be a train which has a movie inside of it that goes back and forth between the two Harry Potter rides and the two different sides of the park. So I have to go back and visit the train in April if anybody wants to go with me. I'm looking for a travel companion. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the idea was on this ride, we wanted all the seats to work for everybody, but the strap system would be provided if somebody didn't have good control of their legs. No, that was just simulating the fact that we knew we needed the front of the seat to come down more, and that's what we ended up doing on the design of that ride, is that it needed a plate there so that the legs wouldn't swing underneath the ride, because when the robot comes back into the station and sets you back down, we didn't want somebody to get their legs caught underneath there. And the other thing that they did on the ride is they created an entirely separate loading station so that there was more time for somebody with special needs to get on and off the ride. So you actually ride an elevator up over the track, down the other side. You have as much time as you need to get in and out of the ride, and there's room for two or three of the ride vehicles to pull in there. And then when you're ready, it feeds you back into the system, because everybody else is on a conveyor belt that's following the moving robots that as you board them and get into them, and then it lifts you up and off you go into the ride. Yeah. Like in Harry Potter, we got involved about 5 years before it opened. So it was like going to a car building shop in Detroit, Michigan, where they were trying to design a really lightweight seat because they're going to put four people on it and it's going to be the end of a robot, so they can't afford any extra weight on the end of the ride. So it was all made out of lightweight graphite composite. And then the robots are Canadian, so they had to go up to Vancouver to do stuff with the robot, and then they finally brought a robot down to a sound studio in Florida, I think, and then that's where I rode around in the sound studio and got a bloody nose riding on the, and you know, in a big warehouse flying around on a robot with the lights on, realizing, wow, you're quite a ways up in the air. So they don't tell anybody about the fact that they're 15 feet in the air when they're riding the robot, because a lot of people are afraid of heights, and if they knew they were really 15 feet in the air, they wouldn't ride the ride. So you don't know. I mean, you feel like you're flying around the air if you've been on Harry Potter. You know, it's pretty fun ride. But they're able to simulate so many movement patterns that nothing on a track can do. So there's really nothing else like it. It's the most technically advanced ride in the world. You should go try it out if you haven't ridden it. It's fun. And then Transformers is another new ride. They used the same ride vehicle that Spider-Man had, and basically you transfer the whole side of the car that's right here lifts up out of the way. And so it's, instead of having to fold the side of the car down out of the way, it completely folds up out of the way, so it's more of a universal design solution because it makes it easier for everybody to get into the ride. The whole ride vehicle comes back down, and so for getting in and out, it's really a piece of cake for getting in and out of that ride. So, and that's last summer in San Francisco with my daughter, a closing shot. So, questions? More questions? Yeah, and if any of you come up to Lake Tahoe ever, our office is literally about 20 minutes from South Lake Tahoe, just right over the Kingsbury Grade. If you skied at Heavenly and you look down in the desert there in the valley, that's where Beneficial Designs is, and we'd love to have you come and visit our facility and have a guest house. You can, you know, stay for the weekend or something. Come visit, go skiing together, whatever. Please come up and visit, and we have interns that come up and work with us and stay with us sometimes for a week, sometimes for a month, sometimes for 6 months. So be looking forward to talking more about, there's about two or three times as many things that I could talk about today. But Dave, help me. I trust that Dave knew what you guys wanted to see the most. So, thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Peter, again. Two answers who might want to join us for dinner. One, and two, three, four, five, six. Okay, stop. Thank you. So,
I'll be here for a few minutes if anybody wants to
ask. And have a great weekend, everybody.
Wonderful to see you again.
Yeah.
The next time I have to meet your daughter.
You know what? I've already asked. often told the parenting coordinator that I want to be able to bring my daughter to this class one of these years.
Right.
Because I'll have to take her out of school, but for an education.